Welcome back to another episode of the Legendary Light Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Rice, and today I am answering the call to have more Australian guests on the show. I have a guy today with an incredible story. His name is Ryan Madges. He is Australian. He built a very successful business in his early 20s, a seven-figure business, only to realize that he wasn't being fulfilled through that particular business that he built. Then he went on to do what he's up to now, which is helping people with passion who want to make a difference in the world. And we're going to get into that and more, but also I want to tell you, Ryan has an incredible story. A lot of people listen to this show because of my story. But one of the things I'd like to do with this show is to tell other stories, tell other people's stories, other people's incredible stories. I want you to hear the ups, the downs, the trials, the tribulations, and most importantly, how they got through it, how they became successful in their own right. And today's story is one of those. So you will learn how to better build your business, whether you should build a business or whether you're fine just the way you are right now, working in a corporation, working for someone else. You will also hear Ryan's incredible story, and you'll hear about mindset, how to develop the type of mindset to be successful no matter what your career goals are, no matter what your business goals are. And I'll tell you something, I didn't know what to expect when I first had Ryan on the show, when he first reached out to me. I had never heard of him before, and I got to tell you, I was impressed with the way he brought the knowledge, the way he brought his energy, and the way he showed up and delivered information that will help you succeed in whatever your goals are. Without further ado, let's get to the interview with Ryan Madges. Ryan Madges, welcome to the Legendary Light Podcast.
Thank you, my friend. So good to be on here, Ted. And you're such a heart-centered guy. I just want to give as much value as I can today. So I'm pumped to get straight into it. So hit me with a question and we'll roll.
All right. Well, first I want to talk a little bit. Well, I'm really happy to have you on because you're a very young guy. You're 23 years old. That's very young to me. I'm like 39 right now. And you grew a business to seven figures when you were 21. I'm always impressed when I hear stories of business success from people like yourself who achieved so much at an early age. And also, Ryan, I've been called out for not having enough Aussies on the show. So I'm really happy for both of those reasons. So all my Aussie listeners and friends, I heard what you said and I've answered. So I've got Ryan on the show and he's got an amazing story. In fact, can you tell a little bit about, just briefly go into what it is that you do right now?
Yeah, sure. And on that Aussie note, good to know that you pulled through on the Aussie front. I filmed a video the other day for a promotion, a seminar that I'm running in Los Angeles. And in the video, I pre-framed very strongly that if they looked behind me in the city, because I was in Melbourne, there weren't people riding kangaroos and wrestling crocodiles. I feel like people have this view of Australia as this being this crazy out there place where it's just pretty normal. It's just pretty standard. But anyway, I'll give you guys a bit of an overview of what I do. So I run a business called Winning International, and our sole focus is to change as many lives as possible. And the way that we do that is by targeting and helping coaches. So coaches being fitness coaches, life coaches, mindset coaches, health, dating, relationship coaches, even business coaches, anyone that kind of helps other people. I pretty much help them grow mainly in the way of marketing and sales, but a lot to do with their structure starting out and their systems and scale, things that they need to scale the business. So hiring as well and thought leadership stuff a little bit later in the business after they get their initial success. So I've pretty much got two main programs that we offer and I just run people through them and it's just super results based. And we work to help them help as many people as possible. So that's essentially what we do.
Yeah, very cool. And When I mentioned earlier that I was not successful, I forgot if I said that on or off the interview. I think it was before we hopped on and started recording. But when I was 22 and I got into the fitness business, I was really coming from my heart all about becoming the best fitness professional I could be and pouring my money, my time, my effort into learning how to do that, then coming back to my clients and applying it. But it wasn't until I learned marketing much later on in sales, like you just mentioned. And I've harped on people about that here. So really glad that there are people helping with that. But Ryan, you also mentioned that you had a really tough upbringing that led to your early success. I want to go into that story and feel free to share those lessons, that first your hero's journey, your superhero origin story, and tell us how it led to such early success in your life.
Okay, great. Thank you. So essentially, without going too far back, I had a bit of a rough upbringing. There's definitely people who have been through worse, but a bit of a drug abusive family. So alcoholic mom, drug dealer dad. And when I was growing up, it seemed normal and it was fine. There was a lot of arguing, a lot of, you know, fighting and stuff. But my parents still have good hearts down underneath. They were just a little bit covered and, you know, smothered in addiction, which was a bit of a shame. But essentially what happened was when I was 13, I just remember waking up one morning and I was in year seven, so I just started high school, and just remember hearing my dad on the phone, and like I'd just woken up and he's just saying, you know, what do you mean you're not coming back? And he's just shouting into the phone, and I didn't see my mom for a good 4 years. So after that period of time, I was really, really close with my mom. I wasn't very close with my dad at that stage. It just completely shocked me. So I went from being a confident younger kid who was a little bit of an achiever, like I was good at my sport, I was worked hard at school, and I just was completely shocked. I lost all my confidence. I slumped, my grades slumped. I didn't hang out with the people I'd usually hang out with, and just, you know, was very quiet and hang out with other really quiet people, and became a massive follower. My sport, like, confidence dropped, and obviously confidence leads to a lot of success in all areas of life if you're certain at it. So pretty much my results in every area of my life dropped, and I went into a little bit of a different version of me for a few years to come. Then I had a bit of a pinnacle moment. I was a golfer. Golf was a massive outlet for me. So I used to play before school. I'd catch public transport to the golf course at like 5 a.m. and play golf and practice. And then I'd go after school because I lived near the golf. My school was across the road from the golf course, so it made it very easy. And what I pretty much did was I had this guy at the golf course who was kind of like a mentor to me, and he was a super nice guy. And we'll teed up to play on one weekend, and we're playing in just a regular golf competition, which was at the local club, this club. And he said to me, his name is David, and he said to me, Ryan, if you shoot this certain score today, it was a fair bit of a stretch, then I'll buy you an iPod for your birthday. And I was like, what the, like, for me, that would just meant the world. So I was like, Dave, you're on, bring it on, let's go. And I ended up shooting that score. And the funny thing was, he did buy me the iPod, but when I got the iPod and I went on there to just upload songs and stuff, he'd actually already slung a bunch of Tony Robbins tapes. And for me, yeah, that was completely changed my course. I wasn't on a bad course. I was being destructive. It was more, I just lost my confidence. So I then started listening to those tapes on the way to golf, at golf, on the way home, and just slowly started to realize that, you know, I could actually live a healthy life. I could live a successful life, and I was in control of that. And so that was huge for me. And it really changed the course of what I did. So even though I had such heavy anchors towards who I was known as at school, I wasn't known as being like anything too crazy or too low, but I was segmented and had an anchor to being a very nervous person at school. So I really struggled to get out of that. And so even though I started switching around my grades, it was about year 10. So year 10, year 11, that I started to really knuckle down again and change the way I was acting in everything and start to almost up my standards again. But then as soon as I left high school, I looked back and I had so many regrets. I wish I'd done more leadership at school. I wish I put myself outside my comfort zone. I wish I worked harder and did subjects I was more passionate about. I had a lot of regrets. And so I went on a mission pretty much as soon as leaving school to work on my confidence. So I joined Toastmasters. I got a sales job. I started my own business. I did all these different things that were purposely, what was I afraid to do? What could I do that was going to put me outside my comfort zone? So even going up and talking to like random girls and getting over the fear of social, rejection and stuff as well. Anything that I could do to get more confident, I did. I even moved states to somewhere else where I didn't really know anyone. So I had to be forced to meet new people. I did a lot of things to improve my confidence. And from that point, over the next 3 years, I just went on a bit of a business journey. So I launched in around 10 different businesses, and they were in all sorts of areas. I had an app called Mood Swing that I jumped on with a few other guys to run, which was really cool. And we got 100,000 users in the first month, which was pretty interesting. It was kind of like Instagram, but you share your emotions and the way that you feel as opposed to just statuses and stuff, which was pretty cool, but I wasn't passionate about it. I was helped doing a JV with a PT generating in leads, and he would therefore give me a commission for that. So that was kind of like a business. I had a digital agency building websites for tradies. I had a product for personal trainers, which I built. I invested over $30,000 into this platform and had a team of five people building it. It was like a SaaS product, so they could build their own website and book in clients and stuff. I had just a bunch of different things. I was a dating coach at the same time after I kind of conquered my fears. I was helping guys around the age of 30, kind of nice, even you could call them nerdy guys, but really nice guys, meet people and kind of get that social confidence. So I had all these different things going on and chopping and changing, just trying to get successful in business and neglecting the fact that deep down what I knew I wanted to do was purely be an influencer and change people's lives, become a thought leader, really test myself. But I'd always associated that was something I was going to do once I get to here. So now I've got to do this first and then I can go out and do what I want to do. So that was a story that I told myself for a while, and it delayed my path of doing what I really wanted to do, which was winning international, what I do right now. And I got to the point where I was built up a digital agency. I'd kind of got a little bit more focused, but I was running this digital agency and we had a team of eight people in there. It's going really well financially. And I just stopped and I said, I just wasn't feeling good about it, even though I was getting the financial rewards. And I stopped and I said, what can I do to start to get some clarity around why I'm feeling this way? And usually when I hit a problem, I reverse engineer what has to be done to hit the solution. So I tried to reverse engineer my entire life by going to the end. And I thought, why don't I write out my own eulogy? Like, why don't I write out what I want to be remembered for when I die? And it was a big task to do. I can tell you that. It was quite confronting.
What did you say in the eulogy? What was it that helped you, guide you? Because you said you had this pinnacle moment where you got into golf, you had this mentor. He sneakily, slickly uploaded some Tony Robbins instead of trying to force it on you. That's brilliant. And if anybody's listening right now, that is one of the most brilliant things I've ever heard to get people turned on to something that's going to help them in their life. You buy them something and upload a bunch of stuff on it, then give it to them for someone. That's just, I'm going to remember that. And then you went down this path. You sounded very scattered, even though you were being successful and you were trying things. Then you came to the point where you are now. You're happy with this winning international business. But what was it in that eulogy, if you don't mind sharing, that helped you get so much clarity?
Yeah, 100%. So the big defining factor of what happened when I did that activity, I don't remember the exact words that I wrote on the eulogy, but the basis around it was, it wasn't about success. It wasn't about money. It was about loving more and giving more. And so what I pretty much realized at that point was what I wanted to be remembered for, or what I wanted people to say when they got to my funeral, was how much I meant to them. And so it became more about impacting people and not just being successful, which is why at that point I set a vision in place and a mission to raise $1 billion for charity. And the way through which I wanted to do that was by helping people who help other people, helping them thrive and being able to contribute a lot myself, but also getting these other heart-centered coaches and change agents to really play a big part in that contribution mission as well. And I launched, like, I had to really pull myself out of a fixed situation with that digital agency because I was already quite invested in it. I had a big team, like I said. So pretty much I probably had 20 to 25 projects going on at that point. I had to hire a web manager or someone that could deal with the projects. I had to refund a bunch of clients. I pretty much lost a bunch of money and it put me right back to square one. But to be honest with you, I didn't really care at the point. All I knew that I had to do was launch this business. And I had to do it fast. So to kind of drain the last of my cash flow, I invested in a $50,000 mentor. And that wasn't an upfront payment. I had $1,000 coming out of my account a week, which was massive. And it essentially, at the end of the day, I had my back against the wall. So I launched a seminar. I ran 12 seminars in the first 10 weeks of winning international. And this is a week after making this decision. I ran the first one. Yeah, got 5 people into my 8-week course that I hadn't built yet. Then second week, I did it again, got another 5 people in. Then week 3, launched this course by creating day 1's content. And then in day 1, I created day 2. I knew that I had to do it, and I was forced to be in a situation where I had to make things work. And I think the kind of the key metaphors here or that the guys listening could take on from this that I learned in these situations was, number one, don't put off doing what you know you want to do. For me, I was putting it off for years. And if there's any regret that I have, it's not starting what I really, really wanted to do sooner. Because even if you wait enough, time doesn't change the barriers. Time doesn't change the roadblocks. Time doesn't change the problems that are going to come up. And a lot of people feel like they're not ready. So if they were going to start, they were going to get friction. But the friction's going to be there. It doesn't matter how long you wait to start. You're always going to have to tackle the same shit. So if you get onto it sooner, then you're going to get to your goal sooner. And that's probably the biggest kind of learning that I had from it. As soon as I launched, I was like, far out. Why did I not start this 2 years ago? Why did I wait all this time thinking that I had to do things prior to this to be qualified to do what I was meant to do? And that was the first thing. And the second one was kind of back against the wall. If you can make a decision that forces you to get a result, I feel like it's investing in yourself and putting yourself into a situation where you have to get the result is probably the biggest secret weapon that I use in my own life, my own business. So for example, I wanted to do more videos recently, and instead of just kind of being like, okay, cool, I'm going to rely solely on my willpower, I hired a full-time videographer. So I think over the last maybe 3 months, I've filmed well over 100 videos because I have to. I've got someone full-time in the business that does video. I've got no choice but to thrive with that. But if I was going to go, okay, cool, I want to do more video, I'm just going to leave it down to me, then, you know, I would have tried to summon my willpower and then done one video and then maybe not done it for a couple of weeks and done another video. I know I would have done more than that because I'd already done some videos, but it would be nowhere near the extent that I am now. And there's no friction now because I've already made the decision, and the decision got over those nerves, that fear, the anxiety, you know, the friction right from making that decision. And that was the same thing I did by hiring that $50,000 mentor. It was scary, but I knew that if I did that, I'm resourceful enough, I would find a way to make it work. Even if it was going to get worse before it got better, I was prepared to make that sacrifice because I was focusing on this for the rest of my life. It wasn't just a little phase. I was committed, I was focused, and I knew my purpose and vision. So hopefully those two key pieces of advice help.
Yeah, it's great. And when I listen to you speak, you don't sound like you're 23 at all. You sound, you know, I've been through, although I'm not nearly as successful business-wise as you, I've learned a lot of the same lessons and many of the same things come up. I mean, on this podcast with interviewing all types of people. So it's really impressive that you're able to have that maturity. And I want to ask you something because I deal with a lot of very, very financially successful people. People who are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And throughout the years, my 17 years here in Miami Beach, I've met so many wealthy people who are completely miserable. They're hooked on making money because they're looking for something to make them happy and they don't know what to do. So they just go back to what they know, what kind of gives them a short-term fix, which is just making more money, having more success in business, even if they're not really into what they're doing, if it doesn't really make them happy. What would you say to someone, or do you have a story about helping someone who is in that situation, constantly seeking and searching and not perhaps getting success, perhaps setting goals, but not really getting the real thing that they want?
Yeah, there's lots of examples. I feel like all we have to do is look at Tony Robbins' 6 Human Needs and just realize that the first 4 create some level of happiness short term, and then the last 2 create fulfillment long term. So you've got certainty, which is safety. It's just making sure that things are consistent. You've got a roof over your head, you've got a job, you've got consistency and security. Then you've got variety, which is just obviously spicing things up. And then you've got connection, which is love, relationships, other people giving you love back. And then you've got significance, which is feeling important, feeling valued, maybe getting promoted at work, and all of a you're in charge of some people and you get that feeling of significance, or people listen to you and look up to you and respect your advice. So that's given you significance. And if you've got those four things, you can get that from a business, but is it, and you can get growth from business, but you know, based on the business that it is, will determine how much contribution it has. And growth and contribution are right up there in terms of giving, and giving back is what creates happiness and fulfillment. And if you look at, you know, the people that I help, I only work with people that are in a business they want to do for the rest of their life. I'm not interested in helping people that just want to grow their business, because at the end of the day, I feel like that's a means to an end. Because yeah, they might be able to get financially successful from it, but you're not going to thrive in it and continue to love it as you go. And I'll be honest with you, there's still times when you're running a business that helps other people and it's hitting all your needs, that you know, get worn out or feel down, or you're not, it doesn't mean you're perfect all the time. But the key is making sure that you're consistently looking back to how you can give and how you can consistently grow. I think a lot of people look at business owners sometimes that are really successful and go, you know, all you want is money. And when you get some, then you want more. It's like you can never get enough. But the reason that people want that, it's not that they're craving money and that they're hungry for money. It's that they're hungry for growth. And they believe that, you know, their body's craving growth, because every time they grow, they feel good. And so they want to grow more. And that's okay. I think you should grow for the rest of your life, because it's something that's going to create fulfillment. But I don't think you should expect that growth to give you a final bout of never-ending fulfillment, because you're going to only continue to feel fulfilled as you continue to grow. And so I used to look at things as a destination, and now I look at it as more of a journey, because I understand that fulfillment's something that happens on a daily basis, not on a conclusive ending to some success or some to some short-term goals being hit. Not at all. And that's something that I've learned, because if I looked back and said, okay, cool, Ryan, at this age you'll be here, you know, I would have said, boom, I'm set. That's all I'd think. I'd think, wow, if I hit that, then my life's going to be set. I'm going to feel happy 100% of the time, all the time. Like, I'm going to have everything I ever want. But it's not that case. You know, I've still got the human need for growth. I still got the human need for contribution. So if I'm not hitting them, I'm not going to feel happy. So I think it's really important to understand that happiness takes work. You've got to actually put in the effort to get it, and you can't expect it to come from some success.
Yeah. And I love what you're going into, the six human needs. Tony Robbins, although he's not a psychologist or anything, he's got so many brilliant ideas. And even I've had a performance psychologist on here talking about how he was so inspired from Tony Robbins. And he's just inspired so many people, myself included. I read some neuroscience, some research in neuroscience showing that it is all about that as well. It's just the way we're wired. We need that constant growth. It's not a destination. It's that journey that actually makes us happy. What would you say to someone who is not an entrepreneur, who's not a coach, but perhaps they're working in a job? It's not a bad job. They're doing well financially, but they don't feel that all their needs are being met to make them happy and fulfilled. And they perhaps think that there's something else out there, but maybe they're a bit frightened to go after it or uncertain about what they would do. Where would you suggest that they start to think about what to do next?
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. People that are in jobs, usually the reason that they're so scared to leave is because they're going to completely, in their mind, the story that they've got is that they're going to completely sacrifice that security, and that got reinforced to them by everyone in their life. So if they were going to go to leave and they're considering of leaving to do something else, let's say they wanted to start a business that they were passionate about that would give them more fulfillment, then they're going to talk to their friends. Their friends are most likely in the same situation, and society says that that's risky. They're going to speak to their family. Everyone around them in their environment is going to make that story stronger by reinforcing it, that leaving is actually the worst thing that you could do security-wise, and that everything could stuff up completely. So what I would first and foremost get this person to do is to stop for a second and not take any paths without chunking up to the highest level. So let's pretend they're in a forest, just metaphorically speaking. They're in a forest. They're trying to get to some other place or other path that's more passionate for them. If they're just like running around frantically in the forest, like going different directions, they're not going to go anywhere. But if they get in a hot air balloon and just kind of have a bird's eye view of the whole spectrum of their journey, of the paths that are available, of what they're passionate about, and can look down, then they can go back down with a map and actually follow the right path as opposed to just frantically running everywhere, hoping to get on the right path. It's just not going to happen.
So how do we get that bird's eye view?
Well, what I would do to simplify that finding of the map is to just pause for a second and ask yourself some very intelligent questions. Three questions that I would ask is, number one, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? That would be one. The second one I would ask is, if you were going to die in 12 months' time, what path would you have wished that you were on? Or if you were to die today, what path would you have wished that you were on? And lastly, if you had to work on one path every single day for the rest of your life and you were never allowed to retire and you had to work 12 hours a day every day, what path would actually make you happy? And I think if you ask those three questions, it'll get you a lot clearer on what you really want to be doing. So that's first and foremost. But the main piece of advice I would give for people wanting to, especially because a lot of people in, I think business is awesome. Obviously, I'm quite passionate about business because I've been in it and I know how fruitful it is to give you freedom and to hit all your needs. It's kind of a no-brainer. But the thing that people are scared of, like I said earlier, is that fear. And so the big thing that comes up, or the way that we can make that fear less powerful in our mind, is by looking at the term realistic. You know, we see so many people every time we want to do something that's a little bit different. And if you're in a circle of friends that are all security-based in a job, then different is going to be doing a business. So if you go to do it, they're going to say, no, hang on a second, you got to be realistic about this. Be realistic. And the funny thing about people saying that is that the term realistic itself, the definition of the term, is to represent things in a way that is accurate. And accuracy means logic. When someone says, be realistic, they're saying it in an emotional way. So they're saying something that's meant to be, by definition, logical, but they're saying it emotionally. So they're contradicting the term itself. So if we actually, what I would rather people do is legitimately be realistic. And by that, I mean actually put on our common sense hat and start to approach the way that we're going to do this business from a realistic format, from a logical format. Because most of the time, people don't succeed in business and the transition into business because of emotions, not because of logic. Like, they've got a profitable business, they could make sales, they could make it work, but they're just stuck in overwhelm, so they don't do anything. So if we just look for a second and just say, okay, cool, someone might leave their job and set a goal to have a $250,000 business, and that would be awesome, and they'd be happy if they get there in 12 months. If they've got a 5K product, then that's only 50 sales in total, which is a sale a week. Like, who cares what the product was? Let's say it was like a plumbing job in a house, or they're a plumber. Not that I'd recommend doing that, because I can't see people being that passionate about plumbing, but something that they're more passionate about. So it's a 5K product. That's 50 sales, which is only one sale per week. That's it. Just one sale per week. To do that, they might have to have three conversations a week. So if they can generate three leads per week, every week, then they'll hit the sales goal. If they hit the sales goal, then they'll hit the cash flow goal and they'll have a $250,000 business. But most people, what they do is they go, 250K, it's way too big. I don't know how I'm going to achieve that. What am I going to do? And then they just go in there and they're like, okay, cool. I need a website. Okay, I need a business plan. Maybe I need to hire an accountant. And they're just doing random scattered shit, but they're not actually logically looking at what has to happen. You hit the one sale per week, you're going to hit the goal. If you don't hit the one sale per week, then you're not going to hit the goal. It's as simple as that. So I think people really need to align that logic and just say, okay, cool. What could I do on a weekly basis that would guarantee, so even over-exaggerate what has to be done, that would guarantee that they would hit that those three leads per week? Because they hit the leads, then they'll hit the sales. If they hit the sales, they'll hit the cash. And if you go into it with that plan, saying, actually, I'm in control here, then when they go to launch this thing, they're going to smash it. But without that, they're going to go in emotionally. And if they don't do anything, yes, the business will fail. If they don't do any marketing, they will not get leads. If they don't get leads, they're not going to make sales. If they don't make sales, they don't have a business. And so logically speaking, yes, you will fail hardcore. You will lose money. You will be on the street if you go into a business and do nothing. But if you go in with a plan and make a commitment to do the hard work, the on-the-business work, not the in-the-business stuff that keeps it going, like the admin and operations and planning, but the on-the-business stuff, so marketing, sales, thought leadership, systems, hiring, the things that actually propel the business forwards, then you're set. So I would say, don't be emotional, be logical. Be emotional in terms of your ability to choose what you're passionate in doing and expressing your love for what you're doing. But when it comes to actually assessing the goals of the business and your approach to it, you have to be more mature. You have to be more logical. And if you can do that, then you're going to radically increase your chances of making it work.
Yeah, and for me, said.
Yeah. Thank you. But from my point of view, that is the safest thing you can do. If you're in a job, you know, that, you know, especially if you're not passionate about it, then you're not in control. But if it's your business, you choose how many leads you want to get. You're going to do the work, you'll get the leads. If you don't do the work, you won't get the leads. But you choose. You can work half a day and still have a $500,000 business. You could work a full day, have a $500,000 business. You could work a full day and just choose to do nothing and just be lazy and procrastinate most of the time, and you'll have a business that's broke. So it's really down to you and the work, but don't tell me that it's down to some external force and that it's risky.
I love what you're talking about, and I agree with you. I mean, it really, most people aren't realistic. They look at what their friends are doing, or they think about the negative stories they've heard of people who've tried to go out on their own and opened up a restaurant and it went under, and or opened up some other type of store, or perhaps tried something online and it went under. And that's what they mean, because we're so wired for negativity, to assess threat in our life, to make sure that we're able to survive. And threats don't come in saber-tooth tigers or angry tribes anymore, you know, not in the US and not in Australia or the UK or Canada, but they come guised as bankruptcy or too much debt. Or so I love your perspective on that. However, I want to ask you this. You're talking about going off, starting a business. All you need to do is focus on the sales, focus on the marketing. What I want to ask you, Ryan, is what's your opinion on whether everybody should be an entrepreneur, or can anybody be an entrepreneur? Because before you answer, I'm the most confident, the most passionate, the most in touch with what I'm doing in my life. However, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And I've been an entrepreneur since I was 22, although I didn't know it at the time. I was a sole proprietor, more than a business owner. So what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, great question. So no, I don't think everyone should have to be. But I do assume that the audience you're listening to with your demographic will mostly be people that are inspired to do more, and a lot of those people want to be entrepreneurs. But no, I don't think you have to be. If you can find what you're passionate about and it hits all your needs and it allows you to hit your goals, you can make a lot of money not being in your own business. You know, some of the biggest CEOs, if you want to go performance-wise within an organization, you don't have to go for performance-wise either. But if you, you know, some of them make $50 million a year and they're not working for themselves, it's not the only way. I just like it and feel it's appealing for the freedom element and the control element, because you can legitimately design whatever you want, whether it's more time, less time, more work, less work, what industry it's in, what you're passionate about, who you work with, you know, everything about it's down to you. And so you can design your perfect life around it, which is what I find appealing. But if you enjoy working for in a team that you don't want to be your own team, you don't want to lead it, and you hit all your needs and can do what you love within someone else's business, and, you know, get to, because not everyone wants to be succeed, succeed, succeed. Not everyone wants to be creative, creative, creative. But if you want to succeed and you're within another role that allows you to have that kind of independence, or you're creative and you're in a role that allows you to be creative and you're hitting your needs in that role and you're hitting your goals, then there is absolutely no reason why you shouldn't do that. And it's not down to me either to dictate what other people want to do. Everyone's got a free spirit. I kind of just look at life from the lens of, we're on a piece of dirt that's floating around the universe that we have known nothing about, living a life that's 80 years when the world's been here for 56 million times that 80-year lifespan. And so we're going to be here for 80 years. Why not play full out? Why not go crazy? Because even if we did go crazy and we were Steve Jobs, then in 20 cycles of that 80-year block, which is 1,600 years, people probably won't even know who Steve Jobs is. And he's the most successful, like, famous person in the world. So you could go crazy, do whatever you want, streak naked around the city, and then in like 6 months' time, no one will even remember. Like, and that's, we're talking, if we go one cycle of life, that's 80 years, but the world has literally been here for 4.5 billion, which is, well, we forget a lot of this stuff. It's literally 56 million cycles of that 80-year block. To me, that's freaking insane. And so if I look at my life, I often use the phrase, life is short, but time is long. Time is really, really long, in contrast, 56 million times longer than our life. So why not play full out? And you can argue that it might be a little bit contradictory. Oh, why does everyone have to be an entrepreneur or anything? You don't have to. You can do whatever you want, but play full out. Don't allow anyone else's fears or opinions or your fears dictate what you really, really want to do. And so my opinion is do what you want to do. And if that's business, great. If it's not, that's completely fine too. But don't try to lower your goals based on the fact that it's unrealistic, because nothing in this world's realistic, because we live in a world we don't understand that's just a blessing, a gift, a miracle of some kind. Like, how the hell am I talking to you, Ted, when you're over in the US in talking
it's
into a microphone
cool.
that I got from Apple right now, literally somehow extending my voice and you're capturing it in a second, but we're thousands of miles away. That makes no sense to me. I don't get it. I honestly don't understand it. There's most of the stuff on this earth I just don't get. It's just crazy. I'm just like speechless. I don't even – if that's how crazy things are, then surely you can have the courage to do what you want to do. That's the way that I look at things, because if you don't, you're going to die an unlived life, and you only get 80 years out of 56 million cycles of that have gone. Why not play full out?
Yeah, well said. And I've never heard it quite put like that in the math. And I appreciate that. I say something similar, but I appreciate that perspective. And when you think about it on that grand scale, it's like, yeah, people probably won't remember Steve Jobs in 100 years. He'll be in a history book somewhere for sure. But anything that's holding you back, any type of fear of being ostracized by society, probably won't happen. So it's so funny, Ryan. I know some people, and some people maybe even listening to this right now, they're like, oh man, I put up my first YouTube video, or I just put out my first blog post. Oh, I'm really kind of scared about it, or a little anxious about it. It's like, dude, if someone hates on you, that's success. Because what too often happens is just you hear crickets. Not even the crickets want to read your, watch your YouTube video or read your blog post. Just nothing happens. And even getting some negativity is actually positive when you're trying to build up. So well said, man. I want to switch directions a little bit, because you said that you teach people business, and you say you work on the marketing and the sales first before you get on to bigger picture things and thought leadership. Can you talk about what it is that you do sales wise, marketing wise, and why does thought leadership come later?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, essentially, I believe in getting the foundation set. I feel like, and I've seen it so many times because I run seminars, I talk to coaches all the time, and there's this idea of coach versus thought leader. Thought leader is someone that's in the media. Thought leader is someone that's got big exposure. They've got a big list. They've got all these big exposures. There's like publishing, media, speaking, getting themselves out there in this massive way. But a lot of the people that are in that position don't actually have the back end with a product. I'm talking from a coaching angle here, with the way that we do business. So they don't have a product that actually delivers a outcome from working with them. So I believe on the front end, if you go do thought leadership stuff, someone reads a book, someone watches a presentation, someone listens to this podcast, I don't honestly believe that the percentage of people that are going to go away from this podcast and make six figures in their coaching business, I don't think it's going to be a very high percentage of people. Hopefully you guys listening are getting massive value and you make some kind of extra leap of faith as a result of listening today. That's my goal. But I honestly don't believe that we're going to get more than 1% of people have a six-figure coaching business as a result. Same deal with a book, et cetera, because most people don't implement. So what I urge people to do is get the back end right first and be able to succeed so easily playing with small numbers, and then amplify it and magnify it and take it to the next level with thought leadership. But work on the foundations first, because, for example, I had a lady at a seminar recently who had was just publishing her eighth book, and she was in debt, massive debt. She had nothing pretty much going for her.
Is this a self-published book then?
Some of them are self-published. I'm pretty sure she had a couple that were authentically published, but she obviously put a truckload of money into it, hoping that all the money was going to come back through book sales. But a book sale, the reason that you don't get a lot of money from a book is because a book's not actually getting someone the result. You'll get some people some little distinctions, but it's not going to get someone the result. So the difference when I get our coaches to put the course together, obviously first they find their niche, make sure their niche is super, super clear, make sure their niche is profitable. So you're marketing to someone's biggest issue, their biggest problem that they desperately want solved. So they're willing to invest to solve it so that you can actually have a premium product because you're putting your money where your mouth is and promising the result. Like with our 8-week course, the promise is we will work with you until you hit six figures. Simple as that. Do the course, we'll work with you until you hit six figures, because it's not hard to hit six figures, number one. And number two, I don't want people doing a course and just not getting results. And if you just want to like buy my book, then go for it. But I can tell you, if you want to actually get the result, do the course. Yeah, it's going to cost more. Who cares? It's, you're going to get the outcome. So I think that's important first. Number one, to get your clients better results, but for you to have a back end as well. It's like I hit seven figures with us having under 1,000 Facebook likes. Yeah, simple as that. Because it didn't take many people to speak to get them over. Because we had a
premium product. Social media is overrated, man. I mean, I'm on there, everybody's on there, and it can be good. But for the most part, it's a waste of time for a lot of people.
Yeah. What I believe, I honestly don't believe it's a waste of time, Ted. Sorry to kind of rebut you there. I just don't think that you have to have a huge following to get big results.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it, right? You don't have to have a huge following. What I meant was spending 90% or 50, 60, 70% of your time. Yeah.
Just posting and kind of mingling on there is not going to change the game for you. But if you build a solid product first and then you mingle on there and you meet one person that randomly adds you and you have a conversation with them and convert them into a 5K course, you made 5K. But if you don't have that and you've actually helped someone with the thing they need the most to completely change their life, whereas if you don't have that back end, you know, you could have, I've literally got a friend who does JVs with big thought leaders. They have to have minimum 5 million followers, and he JVs with them and he does their marketing and sales and helps them build a low-end product and then takes obviously a cut from that by helping them completely. But most of these guys have over 5 million followers and then they're making less than 5K a month, which is just over $1,000 a week. And then contrast that with me having less than 1,000 Facebook likes, but I'm making over seven figures, which is over $80,000 a month. So how the hell does that work? Well, that works from because those big thought leaders, although they're looked up to, people may change their life as a result of their support and their help on a front end, but that thought leader's not actually getting them the result. Whereas if the thought leader was getting them the result, they'd be able to warrant such a large investment from each of those people in which they would be more than happy to spend because they're getting the result. So that's kind of the premise behind it. The more value you offer, the more you get paid. If you offer lots of front-end value, you'll get front-end results and little results. If you offer massive back-end value, then you'll get massive back-end results. Cool. So to summarize all of that, the reason that I focus so much on the foundations before thought leadership is because if you don't have a solid back-end, you put all this work in on the front-end, you could have 5 million followers, but you're not actually transforming their life in the greatest extent because you don't have a system which does that, a business which does that, a product that does that. So I encourage coaches to make sure they've got a really solid back end first, then concentrate on marketing it and selling it to get themselves sorted. So get out of a place of desperation, okay, and get that sorted first, then start to thrive with thought leadership. So you do a book, let's say you get 1 million followers, then that's going to take your business from maybe, you know, $500,000 or $1 million to $20 million, not from maybe $10,000 a year to $30,000 a year. And it's going to actually impact people's lives so much more as well. So that's why I go that order, because I've seen far too many people get the thought leadership stuff set. And I've had a lot of thought leaders that I've actually helped who aren't at the point financially where they should be and where they deserve to be based on their exposure. So if you get the back end sorted, then you're doing things the right way around from my point of view.
Yeah, no, that's so important. And yeah, I mean, you're talking about thought leaders, and I see girls on Instagram with 100,000 likes on every post they do. And I know they're not making any money, that's for sure. So Ryan, I want to ask you something, man, because I've had Daniel Priestley on, who is a fellow Aussie who has the key person of influence approach. I've had on several other people. And Ryan, you know, there are great people like Brendan Burchard who teach courses, Michael Hyatt, Jeff Walker. And also there's some bad ones too. I invested $5,000 to do a marketing sort of business retreat type of thing that I felt like I paid, you know, 400% too much for, and I just didn't get the value out. And there's so many people like that. What would you say about looking for the right person to teach you, the right course to get, and what separates you? How do we know that you're not one of those people?
Number one, I don't think you can be successful as one of those people. You look at Brendan Burchard, Daniel Priestley, and Michael Hyatt. They're all successful, but they all deliver great products. And they're very clear in their expectations that you're going to get. I know that the reason Daniel Priestley is doing so well is because he's got the Key Person of Influence program that has a nine-month back-end program. So he's not just doing a really cool seminar and people walk away going, oh, that was awesome. You know, actually follow through, publish a book, create a product suite, and they get the outcomes. So he's actually got a back end there. So I don't think you can be successful on a big scale, or at least it's not going to last, if you don't have a good solid program that delivers an outcome. That's the first thing. The thing that I would look for is I would look at their track record. Well, that's what I would personally look for. And obviously that begs the question, what happens if someone's starting out? How do they start without a track record? And you can do that. But I would ultimately be looking for their clients. I'll be looking at their case studies. I'll be looking at their results. But the thing that I would keep in mind, and this is what I go into a program for, I think with my level of resources, if I implement in this program like crazy, will I get a 10 times return? I think what a lot of people go into programs with is they go into programs expecting the program to actually somehow, they do the program, then they click their fingers and they've got the result. But the reality with most programs is that you go into the program, you learn a bunch of stuff, then you got to go and do it, then you can click your fingers and you have the result. But the level, the amount of people that actually do it is slim to none. So even if you do go into a program, like I know some people that have gone into KPI and not got results, it's not because KPI is not good. It's a phenomenal program, but you actually have to follow through and implement what you learn to get an outcome. And so for us, it's like we've got a promise with our program that we'll work with you until you hit six figures. We have some people that legitimately have made $100,000 in the first 4 weeks. We had someone literally over the last 4 weeks that he's actually flying down on Monday. I'm literally flying him down to do a case study with him because he made $100,000 in the first 4 weeks of us working together, which is amazing. But because he implemented like crazy. But then you can get people as well. I'm not going to turn them away because they don't implement, but I'm going to be very clear what they need to do to start to get results. And it doesn't mean that our course is wrong or anything like that. The percentage of people that succeed are going to be how well do you help your clients implement. Obviously, the content needs to be good, and our content's phenomenal, and we work a lot on helping people implement it. So I would say the difference with us, especially with our 12-month program, which is more intensive than the 8-week, is that the way that it pretty much works is, yep, there's a bunch of strategy. We do 4 retreats a year, which are phenomenal retreats. No one has been to a retreat and not had the biggest month in their entire business the month after, because they're crazy awesome. But what we do at the retreat is we set a plan. The retreats are exactly a quarter apart. They set I help them get exactly clear on what they're going to do for the next quarter, exactly clear on where their business is going to be. And we break it down to months. And then every week in the group, in our Facebook group, our community, people have to put up what we call the steps to success. So the list of on the business growth activities, and I've got a list which counts, and anything off that list doesn't count as a step. And they've got to do their steps every week. They've got to post it. And if they don't get their shit done on a weekly basis, they get a call from a coach who will know that they need to get their shit done, put it that way. So we get very, very hardcore accountability, only because when people do it, they thrive, they smash it. If they don't do it, they don't smash it. So the reason's like I'm going to Vegas, I've got 8 new case studies to film with awesome clients over there who have just smashed it over the last quarter. And we've obviously got a bunch already, but just another 8 that are just doing really, really well. And we'll do that with them based on the fact that they've implemented. So zero difference between anyone's potential. Like on a DNA level, everyone's got the same potential. No more than 1% difference. But when it comes to actual action, the reason some people are super successful in life and others aren't is because the people that are successful have just simply done more. Not done more in terms of time, but on the important stuff. So I would say to someone, make sure you get a course that's got really good track record, number one. That you can actually trust, but then go into it saying, if I was to implement like crazy in this, what would the return be? Not, is this program going to fix all my issues that I have around my confidence level to get me to implement? Because Most of the time it's not. If you need that, then join a program that's going to help you with your implementation and your confidence and your certainty. So hopefully that helps give you kind of the answer that you want.
No, that's a good answer, and it's a legitimate answer. And I do think it's funny that you mentioned that last part of the program, or that other type of program that helps you more with your confidence, because I think it's really important to know what type of person you are. I've had some people approach me, or we've talked online, and it's like, well, first I'm going to help you out with your confidence. It's like, no, man. I mean, I could always be more confident for sure, but I'm in tell me what to do, then I go do it mode. So if you're listening right now and you're interested in this, it's really important. Are you struggling with the things that Ryan talked about at the beginning? Your confidence, not being clear on what you're about, not knowing what steps to take, then that's a different program versus, okay, I know what I'm good at. I know what value I bring to the market. I know the problems that I can solve that people love me for, but I need the business part. I need to go from being that technician into a business owner, because you don't want someone, I just roll my eyes and just, you know, walk away when people try to tell me about that. It's like, dude, you're not qualifying me to figure out if I'm that person or if I'm this type of person. I'm just like, we've been working nonstop for over 2 years on this podcast, and totally agree with you about the implementation part. It's been the fail forward, try things. Some things work, some things don't. And you just continue to tweak and you get better and you learn. And definitely, I would say signing up for a program would expedite that process, so you have less trial and error on your own. Because most people, myself included and Giselle, we're smart, but we're not smart enough to just go from zero and make something out of nothing and figure out everything to make a business successful. So if you're thinking about doing something online, definitely check out Ryan. Ryan, I can't vouch for your course personally because I haven't been through it, but I really love the way you present yourself, the way you answer questions, because I asked some tough ones and you answered well. Ryan, where can people find out more about Winning International if they're interested in what you offer and perhaps looking into working with you in one of your courses?
Yeah, great. Thank you for asking, and I appreciate all the compliments. One thing I just want to really quickly say is that one thing that we're really pretty hardcore on when it comes to speaking with people as well is that if people come to us and they tell us that they've done 4 courses and everyone's been dodgy and no one's helped, that instantly raises massive alarm bells for me, because I'm thinking, well, if you've done 4 courses, I'm in love with the industry. I think I know our course is world-class. 4 coaches, I know it is the best program in the world for coaches. But I know there's a lot of other phenomenal programs out there in lots of different areas. And if someone tells me that they haven't got any results, it raises massive warning bells for me, because I'm like, well, what's going to be different in this course? Like, why are you going to actually start to do things now when you haven't ever before? So I think that's really important. So pretty much if people want to find us, you can go to winninginternational.com. So winninginternational.com, and check out our content. I would check out our case studies as well, because they're not just giving a testimonial. I actually interview them and talk about the highs, the lows, everything in between, so people can understand the journey required. Because like you said, Ted, not everyone's up for that journey. So I like to be very upfront about what's required on both parts and making sure that's a perfect fit for everybody, or else there's just no point doing it. It's going to be a lose-lose. So we're also very picky with who we let in, because if we let someone in that wants to come in but it's not right, then they're going to leave negatively anyway. So I think it's really important to qualify the people you work with. So if anyone's watching and you want to find out more about Winning International, just go to winninginternational.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, which you just type in Winning International and it'll come up. There's a very bright, colorful branding, which is nice. And so that's how you can find it. And I would go through there so you can find my name. I'm not going to go through the process of spelling my name out, but my name's Ryan Madges and it's got 2 Z's in it. So when you get a winning, if you want to look me up and add me on Facebook, or you know, follow my Ryan Madges page, go for your life. But find the name through Winning. It'll make it much easier for you.
You got it, Ryan. And thank you so much, man. I didn't know what to expect from this interview because we just connected recently, but I really was fascinated about your story and I saw some of your videos. I got a good vibe from you. So I went with it, man. And it turned out to be a great interview. And I wanted to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and most importantly, your time. And I will have all the links to Ryan's information in the show notes and go check them out if you're interested in learning more. Perhaps it's the missing thing that you need to take your business to the next level. Ryan, thanks so much, my man.
I appreciate that, Ted. Thank you to everyone listening. And thanks so much, Ted. Absolutely love what you're doing and love your heart. You've got a big heart and couldn't be more of a genuine guy. So thank you so much. And
wow. Another incredible interview. And I just want to focus on three things that I learned from this interview, the three takeaways that I thought were the most important. And the first one was Ryan's story. Ryan's story, his troubled childhood, being around drug addicts and drug dealers, having drug addicts and drug dealers for parents. While that would have crushed most people and they would have gone on to maybe do the same thing that their parents had done, he went on to become this success at an early age. He's still in his 20s. It's incredible. And I think the biggest takeaway there is no matter what your story is, what your life circumstances are, there is a way to succeed. There is a way to overcome your obstacles, to have a life full of joy, a life full of purpose and passion and fulfillment, but it takes hard work. And I also want to point out the second thing is Ryan had someone in his life that helped him, a mentor, someone who was teaching him golf and challenged him to I don't play golf, so I don't remember what exactly he had said, but he said, if you did this in the golf game, I'm going to buy you an iPod. But not only did he buy him the iPod, he bought him the Tony Robbins audiobooks so he could listen to them. They were already on there. He didn't say, hey, go listen to some Tony Robbins now that you have your iPod. No, he already put them in the iPod. So naturally, he's going to say, oh, well, you know, I'll listen, even though that's not my thing, right? Because that didn't seem like it was his thing at that age, I'm sure. So here's some personal development. I want to listen to some music, man. I want to, you know, hear some beats or some rock and roll, some hip hop, whatever, country music, whatever you're into, whatever genre of music that you're into. And of course, once you start and you feel pumped up after you listen to someone like Tony Robbins, then you start to get it. And the last thing, the last takeaway, and the second one, in case I wasn't clear, was have mentors, have coaches, have someone in your life, whether you pay them, that's what a coach is, or whether it's a mentor, someone who's further down the path than you are, who can help show you the way, can help you solve your problems. So the third thing is be logical, not realistic, right? When he talked about it, and of course, that's what being realistic is, but stop listening to your friends giving you the realistic goals. Man, you got to be realistic about what you can accomplish. Stop listening to people like that and look at case studies. Listen to people's stories. That's why I have guys like Ryan on the show so you can hear that story. Maybe you don't want to build a business. Maybe you want to work for someone else. And you know what? I totally get that because you got to be fully committed to whatever it is that you want to do or you're going to be a failure. So if you're fully committed to working in the company that you're working in, own it, stay there, and be happy. Or if you want to build your business and do something on the side, own it, go after it, and put in the work, put in the time, and understand that it takes time to be successful. But don't listen to anybody else, especially if they don't have success in that area. That's like someone who's very overweight giving you diet advice, giving you exercise advice, someone very weak giving you strength training advice. You know, that's why I make sure I've deadlifted 345 pounds, and I'm not a big deadlifter because I like more athletic movements, and because I have some injuries that can get aggravated with lifting heavy weights with the bar. But I did it in part so I can talk to people and talk about how to build strength, right? Or otherwise, I don't walk my talk. So only listen to people who walk their talk and have knowledge and experience. And I'm going to give you a fourth thing. Make sure you ask yourselves those questions. I think that's the most important thing that I took away from this interview. And ask yourself, what could I do, or what would I do if I couldn't fail? And even more importantly, if I died today, being on the path that I'm on, would I be happy? And I can honestly say, yes, I would be happy dying today with the path that I'm on. No, I haven't accomplished everything that I want, but if I died today and, you know, in heaven or in, you know, the ether or whatever plane of existence, you know, if I had the ability to say, okay, was I happy on that path? I would say absolutely yes. But I will say this, if I had stayed and just did one-on-one personal training, I wouldn't have been. I needed to go beyond that. I needed to be a person who affected more lives than just one-on-one. So ask yourself those questions. Ask yourself and really be honest with yourself about the answer. That's all I've got for you today. Make sure you sign up to our podcast list at legendarylifepodcast.com, where we share with you parts of the interviews or reflections on the interviews and other content that we don't share anywhere else. So have an amazing week.